One of the very important topics or issues for meditators, for Buddhist practitioners, for anybody who wants to become free, is to have a better understanding of thoughts, of thinking, and our relationship to thoughts, and how to be free of thoughts. And I think it's one of the very interesting questions for many people, is one of the interesting investigations, is to investigate what is thinking, what is a thought. Thinking and thoughts make up a huge part of the human life, and much of what goes on in human life, in human society, passes through the filter, the canals of our channels of our thinking. And many things seemingly have their genesis in thoughts. Much of everything we see around us and read in the papers, and many things, you know, have begin somebody who's thinking it somehow or other. Much of what we've become in our lives, the directions we've taken in our lives, and the way we've understood our experiences in life, understood our relationships, happen through the filter of our thinking about them, thoughts. And what are thoughts? They're so important, but what are they? And why are they so centrally important to human life? And do they need to be as centrally important as people take them to be? There's a famous little story in our circles, in the Vipassana circles. I think it was an Indian Vipassana teacher who told someone, I think it was kind of, maybe she had done an interview with him earlier in the day, and so he was addressing her directly, but he said, the thought of your mother is not your mother. And that statement was very helpful for this young woman. The thought of your mother is not your mother. So you can change that and fill in anything you want. To realize that when we're thinking about somebody or thinking about something, it's often not the thing itself, or maybe it's never the thing itself. But if we're relating to our thoughts about something as if it's the thing, if it's the mother or whatever, then we're living in kind of a virtual reality. And it's a little bit dangerous, or very dangerous, if we think that our thoughts represent our mother accurately, or represent the past. One of the great discoveries has been that human beings are notoriously creative in their remembering of things, and that memories can seem so accurate in the moment of having a memory. But if you track a human being as they remember something over years and decades, there's a slow shift. Like the game of telephone, you whisper in someone's ear and you go around the room, and it's fascinating what comes out the other end. It seems that sometimes memories can be that way. And the mind plays telephone with itself. And, as the fish gets bigger in the telling, right? So it can be quite dangerous, our thinking, if it misrepresents reality, for example. And projection is often, a symptom or a sign or manifestation of this. I like to point out, or I like to, to remind myself that thinking and thoughts are among the most ephemeral, insubstantial events in the universe. And probably other things, but thoughts don't have weight, as far as I know. Maybe it's possible to figure out a way to weigh thoughts. I mean, there's little electrons and stuff, the chemicals that go around, and maybe if you really try, you could probably figure out some way, but, not ordinary people like us. You're going to need some heavy-duty instruments, don't you? But thoughts don't have any weight. They don't have any color. Do they have a location? Do your thinking have a location? Some of you maybe point to your head, but that's not very precise. if you start kind of pinpointing, where does thinking occur? Some people think that thinking occurs just outside their head or around, unlocalized. Some cultures believe that thinking happens in the heart. Some cultures think that thinking happens in the stomach. We tend to think, many of us here in the West, that thinking happens in the head. Why do we have that idea? I don't know. It seems to me like that's where it happens. But our thinking, you know, what is it? And why do we, you know, it's so insubstantial. A story I've told often of kind of seeing this very clearly one day doing a walking meditation and going back and forth, trying to stay present in my walking, but actually my mind was drifting off and thinking. And I came to the end of the walking path. I was walking back and forth. And I turned around and took two or three steps into the on the path. So the walking meditation path was back and forth the same direction, or same path. So if I turned around, then I was walking on the same place I just walked a moment before, but in the opposite direction. So I turned around and took two or three steps. And then I thought, I realized something. Where that those thoughts that I had 2 moments ago, when I was facing the other direction, standing in exactly the same place, where were they now? I looked around. And they seem so important, you know, and so central and so important to deal with and resolve it and get into it 2 moments before. But when I turned around, you know, I couldn't find them. I was still in the same place. Where were they? Where are those thoughts? And the latching on to thoughts that can exist in the human mind is phenomenal. The ways in which we fuel our thinking and act on it, and like the magnitude, like the Velcro mind. Has anybody experienced Velcro mind? Is it the thoughts have Velcro, or is it the mind has Velcro? And the thoughts just peacefully pass through, and there's this Velcro that... Or is it that the thoughts have Velcro, and your mind is just peaceful and shining and radiant, and, you know, it's minding its own business, but, you know... But actually, because Velcro, I say both things have to have Velcro, right? They just have different kinds of hooks. Sometimes I think, you know, sometimes I look at my mind and see occasionally how active my thinking is. And I think that probably I could solve the energy crisis. You just hook little electrodes up, and just there's so much, you know, energy and power and thinking. But what is a thought? And the other image that I've often thought about is if they send a probe deep into space, you know, way out beyond the solar system, and, you know, no one's ever seen a thought before. You know, have you really seen one? I mean, no one's really seen. No one knows the shape and the color and all that. The font that's in, no one knows. And so imagine if they send this probe deep in space, and somehow or other, this probe finds a thought that's floating out there in space, and they take a photograph of it. It would be awesome. Maybe like that's the, you know, photograph of the Earth from the Moon. Like the first time ever they have a photograph of a thought. It would just be amazing to see a thought. So part of the investigation of thinking and thoughts is certainly their nature. What are they? In their essence, and to realize their insubstantial nature, maybe begins to lift a little bit the veil of importance that they have, the centrality they have. Kind of begins kind of lighten up though around them, not take them quite as seriously. But also to investigate the ways in which we latch on or get hooked or get preoccupied by our thoughts. And anybody who meditates will realize the tremendous power of preoccupation, the way that there's almost a magnet or magnetic force or force that kind of spills the mind out into thoughts and thinking and thoughts and thinking. Probably almost anybody who meditates will also sooner or later realize there's a fair amount of nonsense that goes on in our thought thinking. And nonsense takes different kinds of forms. One form is repetition. mean, it could be the most profound thing in the world you're thinking, but 500 times? After a while, it's kind of doesn't make sense, And if anybody else was talking to you as repetitively as you talk to yourself, it'd be pretty serious. But what's amazing is that when we think repetitively, it usually stays just as interesting each time. The 500th time, it's just as interesting as the first time. So why is that? And that's to investigate. Why is it that remains so interesting and so fascinating, so important to keep thinking the same thing over and over and over again? Why do some people wake up in the middle of the night and they can't go back to sleep? Their thoughts, their mind's agitated and spinning. And they're kind of spinning and spinning. The image I have for being caught up in thoughts is from a little kitten I once knew that chased her tail, spinning, trying to catch its tail. And thoughts sometimes seem that way. They're kind of trying to catch something. And it's like chasing itself. And I know sometimes in my mind that when I'm caught up in my thoughts, they're kind of self-generating. There's kind of a way, it's exhausting, but it's self-generating, where there's kind of this illusion that there's a solution to, and if I can just think it out the right way, or think it enough, or review it enough times, somehow the solution will be there. And so I'm chasing the solution, chasing the thoughts, but the very chasing, it's not possible to find a solution in thoughts, but my thinking doesn't know that. So it's kind of like chasing its tail. And it's like the more the tail kind of runs away, the faster you have to run. And you never get anywhere. One of the things I found out in my life through practice is the tremendous importance of finding a way to break the cycles of thinking, to step outside. It's kind of like thoughts are like this maze. Or like, if you're in that maze, sometimes there's no way out. But sometimes you have to kind of jump over the wall. So don't try to follow the maze to its end, because there is no way. It just kind of curls back on itself. We have to find a way to jump over the wall and get outside of it. And then we have a whole different perspective. So then the question is, what is the world that's outside of thoughts? What's the psychological world? What's the mental world? What's your personal world that's outside of thinking? For some people, it never occurred to them there is a world outside. For some people, they think that they are their thoughts. Some people think thoughts are, they never thought about thoughts. They just take it for granted. I've come across some people who they realize they think, but they don't have a clue what it means to be aware of themselves thinking. It's kind of like as soon as they try to pay attention, they don't even know. They don't know how to turn attention to be aware of thoughts, but thoughts are still going on. I don't quite get it, but that's what people have reported. Maybe some of you are that way. So many people are living in their thoughts. It's kind of like we take up residence, and we take up residence in the world of thinking. And are negotiating our life through that world, seeing the world, interpreting the world through our thoughts. And so to step out of thoughts, out of the world of thoughts, and just discover a dimension of life, dimension of psyche, dimension of being, that is not of thinking, is one of the great things to discover in life. It's very freeing. Because unless a person knows that dimension, why would they leave the world of thinking? Why bother? There was a person who just somehow or other happened to be born in the ocean. And this person had to swim right away. So she started swimming, because you have to swim in the ocean. And swam and swam and grew up swimming and swimming and swimming. And there was this idea that somewhere over there was these islands you could go swim to. And she'd swam and swam and those islands were never there. It was like an oasis in mirage in the desert. You're always swimming, looking for some refuge, and getting pretty tired after 10, 20, 30 years of swimming. And I think, well, there has to be some place to go, and you know, just go, some place I can rest, some land somewhere, and swimming, and going. And then finally, someone came along and said, you know, if you really want to rest, all you got to do is turn over on your back and float. You stop swimming. So some people are always thinking, going. And then the possibility is somehow to turn over and rest, float on our beingness, float on consciousness, float on awareness, float on stillness, float on silence, float on that dimension of psyche which is not thinking. Some people are deeply troubled by the question, who are you in between your thoughts? Like if you have a sentence, right? And there's a moment gap between the next sentence. Some people don't have any gaps. You know, a little gap, you know. And who are you in that gap? Or for some reason or other, your thoughts stop. Who are you in that moment? Some people are deeply troubled by that because they think they are their thoughts. They have no idea that there's a possible to live or orient yourself or find yourself in life unless we're thinking. The suggestion is that thinking is a very important part of human life. We can't do without it. We have to know how to use it wisely. But it's probably just a small percentage, a minority percentage, of the functioning of the human being. You know, it's 99% of the function of the human being happens outside of thinking. It supports us, it carries us, it helps us negotiate life. But we focus, you know, so much on this little percentage. I don't know what percentage it should be called, 1% or 10% or, I don't know, 49.5%. I don't know. But, you know, but we tend to kind of, many people focus so much on the world of thoughts. And, you know, I've done so many years of practice, and still I can find myself kind of falling into the world of thinking and the trap of it and all the various traps of it. Luckily, I have a practice. I have ways of kind of seeing that, waking up to it, stepping out of it, breaking the cycles when they need to be broken. So I wanted to offer you five ways that the Buddha talked about working with thoughts, distracting thoughts, obsessive thoughts, compulsive thoughts. And there are other ways of working with them. So maybe you think about these five, but the most important thing I want to get across today in my talk is not a teaching about thinking, but rather is an encouragement for all of you to investigate your thinking. Look into it. What is it? You just ask the question, what is a thought? And don't assume you know what it is. Just keep asking, what is this? Kind of look at it and wonder. Like, you know, like you're that probe in space and you finally could see one. So the Buddha had five ways of dealing with distractive thoughts. The first way was to shift your attention away from the compulsion, thing you're addicted to, to focus the attention on something that is skillful or wholesome or beautiful or lovely. Some more useful place to put attention. And that's a wide range of things. It could mean thinking about something else that's more useful. And I think there's a lot of power to be found in the ability to shift what we think about. To see, oh, what I'm thinking about is not useful. I think I'm going to think about something else. Some people have that ability, some people don't. It depends a lot on how strong the Velcro is. So sometimes you can shift and focus your thoughts to think about something else. Sometimes you can shift and focus on something that's not in the world of thinking. Something beautiful. Like if you have beautiful feelings, nice feelings. If you have loving kindness, some kindness or compassion, some feelings of kindness. And you focus on those feelings of kindness. Or if you have feelings of pleasure. Sometimes you can focus on pleasure. Sometimes people focus on the recollection of, in the Buddhist tradition, recollection of the Buddha, recollection of the Dharma, recollection of the Sangha, recollection of generosity, the theme of generosity, or remembering our own generosity, remembering our own good deeds and qualities. So to shift to something that is considered useful and skillful to focus the attention on. Some people do it by listening to music. Some people will do it looking at something really beautiful, looking at a sunset or going to the beach. So you kind of let the attention go someplace else. It's very useful to do that, but there's a warning around that. And that is that if a person's doing that all the time, then they're never really actually studying what they're thinking, looking at it directly. And sometimes you actually want to stop and be very honest and see what's going on. Sometimes it's really ugly in there. For some of us, not all of you, of course. But sometimes it's really ugly, you know, the thoughts that goes on in there. And if there's a lot of ambition or greed or fear or hate or aversion, it's very important to be able to not ignore it and turn away from it, but really go into it and see what's really going on there. That's why generally the idea of making affirmations is not all. Sometimes it's a very good idea to make affirmations. It's very popular. We have to be very careful in making them because sometimes they just kind of ignore what's there. Or they kind of put a veneer over what's really there. And what's underneath there is still festering. So you have to sometimes be very careful about that so you don't let something fester. But sometimes if you're really caught in your thoughts, and you need to step outside of it somehow to get a better perspective, or you need to sometimes turning the attention to something wholesome or skillful. The second thing the Buddha talked about is, it could be kind of understood as related to the first one, but the second one is to ignore your thinking. Don't pay any attention to it. And I think this can be very wise. And one of the teachings of that I learned in the Zen tradition was a teaching, don't be bothered by your thoughts. Because to be bothered by your thinking is to be caught in the trap of thinking. To be bothered by your thoughts is to add fuel to the whole energy of the thinking world. To hate your thinking, to be bothered by feel like it's wrong or bad, you shouldn't be thinking that. All the kind of ways in which we're bothered by thinking, there's many, many ways. We're embarrassed by it. I shouldn't be thinking that. I'm supposed to, I've been practicing meditation now for a year. I should be a saint by now. And, all kinds of ideas. Or human beings shouldn't have these kinds of thoughts. You should not hate your parents. If you're really angry for some reason, you shouldn't have those thoughts. It's embarrassing. So there are all kinds of ways in which we kind of censor or judge or criticize the inner world. And the Zen teaching, don't be bothered by the inner world. It's okay. So kind of to ignore it, just let it be. But that's only let it be if you can focus and not have it interfere in your life. So in meditation, that's a great practice. So if you can stay with your breathing, just stay focused on your breathing, come back to your breath, be with your breath, and just ignore that world of thinking. Sometimes that just allows the preoccupation with thinking to diminish, the way in which we fuel it and get caught in it. But if we get bothered by the thoughts, then we're stuck in its trap, in its spell. So I love meditation for a lot of reasons, but one reason because of the way in which in meditation you have permission in a certain way to hate your parents. or the equivalent, whatever it might be. It's okay. No one's asking you to be perfect or be a saint or in meditation, you're not expected to censor what's there or to judge or criticize. There's a kind of you're trying to be honest in meditation. This is what it is. This happens to be, this is bubbling up. This is amazing. And so just not be bothered. Just stay with the breath. Keep focusing on what you're doing. When I was writing my dissertation, this was really important for me. Because dissertation writing, for some people, is a very hard thing to do. And it was a huge task, It felt like climbing this huge mountain by millimeters. And I just felt, I'd have these thoughts, I can't do this. This is too difficult. I don't have the ability. They'll never like it. They'll never pass me. What I'm writing is ridiculous. I don't understand what I'm even writing about. I don't even know why I'm doing this. You know, all kinds of thoughts. But I had made a commitment that I was going to finish this project. I kind of believe you should finish what you start, kind of thing, right? So all these thoughts would arise, and I treated them like pesky little flies in the background. You know, don't pay any attention to them. Yeah, I can't do this. Next sentence. You know, this is impossible. Write that footnote. You know, I just kept going. So I just kind of ignore it. And that was very helpful for me. Sometimes you just ignore these things and just kind of carry on. The third way of dealing with thoughts is, according to the Buddha, actually not just thoughts, I mean distracting thoughts, thoughts that have velcro, thoughts that we're caught by, that are kind of driven by, is to see their danger. And even though we're trying to be very accepting of our experience in mindfulness and practice and be really open and be present for it, that doesn't mean we turn a blind eye to the fact that certain activities of mind are damaging, are dangerous. And I can feel it in myself that if I'm obsessing in certain kinds of thoughts, that it entails a certain level of stress. And if, for me, I feel the stress in my eyes, I feel stress in my cheeks, in my jaws, I can feel it in my neck, I can feel it in my forehead, I can feel it sometimes inside the skull as kind of pressure. I can feel it in my shoulders. I can sometimes feel it in the belly as a tightening, as an pulling up that happens there. Sometimes I feel it in my chest. Sometimes I can feel it in my hands. You know, the manifestation of stressful thinking, manifestation of being caught by thought, for me, it can appear at different times in many different places in my body. The quieter I get, the stiller I get, the more sensitive my body is, the mindfulness is, the more I can notice the physical effect that thinking has on my system, on my body. And it can take a huge toll on in terms of stress on the body to be caught in the grip of thoughts and thinking. It can be quite dangerous. You know, people can have heart attacks from it. And then there's a danger of thoughts that if we kind of think the same thing a lot, we're developing a habit. And a habit very easily becomes an action. And if we live a life of aversion, if you hang out and talk a lot about complaining or anger, anger about this and angry about that and anger about this and angry about that, and then you turn a corner and someone kind of bumps into you, it makes sense to be angry with them too, right? Because you're just on a roll. So there's a kind of to realize the habits of the mind and how the habits create further habits and how the habits create tendencies of how we act and respond in the world, and to see a certain danger in that. It's dangerous to have this kind of thinking, to always be thinking this way. And to tend to begin to take some responsibility for the habits and the movement of how we're thinking. So to see the danger of how we're thinking sometimes helps us to become disenchanted. Not always so easy, but sometimes seeing a danger is, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to think that anymore. I'm not going to be involved in that kind of activity anymore. Many years ago, it wasn't that many years ago, I guess, but there was this time, probably many of you remember, when the stock market was going really well, and really going up. And I had friends who were forming like these stock buying clubs. Maybe you were part of some of you were part of them. They'd meet each other's in the living rooms, and they'd sit around, they'd analyze stocks and talk about where they'd put their money in. And there was so much momentum, so much interest in stocks and money and investments. And it was contagious. So my mind got caught in that world also. And it didn't take me long to realize that was a dangerous place for my mind to be. It was dangerous because maybe I would have invested. you know, I would have done something stupid. But it was dangerous just to have that preoccupation, that tension, that stress in the mind. And what it did, you know, I could see what it could do if I kind of followed that train and got caught in that world. And I saw, you know, I felt lucky. I saw the danger to some degree pretty, you know, easily. And so I was able to let, well, I'm not going to bother with that. I did make some investments, but you know, I had an IRA. You know, I kind of kept away from the obsession around it and thinking about it. So I don't know if that was a good example, but to see the danger of it sometimes can be, and look at what is the danger of this, sometimes can lead to a healthy disenchantment. The fourth approach to distracting thoughts, compulsive thinking, is to relax the thought formation. And thought formation is kind of an odd expression. And what I understand it to mean is to relax the whole complex of our being that feeds into thinking. So there's a disembodied, kind of the insubstantial aspect of the thoughts themselves. But there's also the factory that produces the thoughts. And that factory, that whole complex, the thought formation, is not so insubstantial. I talked about this, the tension and stress that I can feel, you know, in my body around thinking. The pressure sometimes in the head, the contraction sometimes, the narrowing of attention that happens when there's obsession. The compulsivity, the exhaustion that can come, thinking. Sometimes there's emotions connected to thinking. And one of the great investigations is to see the connection between your emotional life and thinking in the emotional life. And sometimes it's very clear that thinking is arising out of emotions. And sometimes it's very clear that emotions are arising out of thoughts. And sometimes you can see the cycle, how they feed each other. And so there's a whole complex of psychophysical kind of phenomena going on sometimes around compulsive, addictive, distractive thoughts. And so to kind of step back from the ideas of what you're thinking and feel the rest of the phenomena, the rest of the activity of thinking itself. Feel the tension in the body, the stress, the pressure. Feel the emotions that are connected to it and relax those. Relax the thinking mind. For meditators who often the instructions is just let go of your thoughts and go back to the breath. But sometimes letting go of thoughts is not good enough because, you know, the factory is working overtime. Just letting go of the product is not going to stop the factory from going anymore, right? So sometimes you have to scare it to kind of, you know, let the factory have a vacation. Let's stop it. Stop having overtime. And so sometimes you have to relax the thinking mind. So one instruction I give you is when you find yourself caught up in thoughts, hang out for a minute with what it feels like to be thinking. And then relax the thinking mind. And then let go of your thoughts. Because if you don't relax the thinking mind, the factory is still, you know, pumping it away. Sometimes it's the emotional body we pay attention to. And you actually have to be very honest and feel very directly the anxiety that's causing certain kinds of thoughts. Or the ambition or the desire or the lust that's there, pumping it away. So to drop down and feel what's going on in the emotional body, emotionally, is one way. And to relax that, to calm it down. The breath is one of the ways to do that. To feel where the thought formation is, the thought activity is, the factory is. And then breathe with it or breathe through it or just breathe with your thinking is one way to help you step outside of that world of thoughts and relax. The fifth way the Buddha gave for dealing with distractive thoughts needs a little bit of a preface before I talk about it. No. What we're talking about here is thinking and thoughts which are so compulsive they've gripped the mind and you have no freedom anymore. You don't have the ability to really let go of it and stop or to see it for what it is, find your freedom with it, step back into the silence of the mind, the beautiful stillness of the calmness of the mind, that somehow you're caught in these thoughts. That's what we're talking about. So what can you do? Sometimes you need to do something radical. And occasionally, what you need to do is the equivalent of what the Buddha called, what the Buddha said, is you clench your teeth and bear down. Now, I think sometimes that's appropriate, perhaps, but maybe sometimes you need some equivalent. It's maybe more useful. Your poor teeth. But this is where you kind of very firm, like the warrior approach, and you say no. Where you kind of hold on tight. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to allow this to happen. I'm not going to do this. Remember when I was younger, a lot younger, having lust. Happened once or twice. And being in the grip of lust, boy, and being in a situation where it was dangerous to be in the grip of lust. Like the temptation was, the door was open, and somehow it was dangerous, wasn't right. It was, you know, and the thoughts, boy, talk about it, and other things also were going strong. And then, you know, and there, you know, okay, I'm not going to do this, you know. And having this real strong resolve, you know, clenching the teeth, no, I'm going to hold on, I'm not going to do this, I'm going to hold my ground and not let this get the upper hand. Maybe some of you think I was foolish, but anyway, I felt the right thing to do. So I don't know if that's a good example, but sometimes, occasionally, you need to take, you know, make a stand and really say no, and use all your strength. Say, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to follow through on this. I'm not going to think this. I'm not going to believe this. I'm not going, you know, something. It has to be done wisely. All these things have to be done wisely. That's the kind of, you have to always understand this. But when it happens that the mind is so caught, sometimes it needs, you need tremendous power to break the cycles of it, if nothing else works. One form it takes is maybe you're going to connect to the breath in meditation. But the way you connect to the breath is with so much effort and power and strength that you actually break out in a sweat. Because the power of thinking is so strong that the only way you're going to overcome the power of those thoughts is by hard manual labor with the breath. That's not the image of what people want from meditation. When they want calm and peace, you know. But when the mind is in the grip, sometimes that's one approach to take. So there's a whole wide range of things that people can do. So what's useful, if some of you ever come across a situation where it looks like you're in the danger of being caught up in your thoughts, then you might start collecting a repertoire of tools and skills that you have handy and what to do in that case. And as you learn, investigate thoughts, and as you learn how to work with thoughts and thinking, then at some point, hopefully, you'll begin seeing a freedom which doesn't require you to stop thinking, to be free. You'll discover a presence of being, a presence of existence, a presence of mind, a presence of heart, a presence that is boundless, that is has no boundaries, very expansive, very spacious, that's always here. And it's not a matter of then stopping the thoughts, but rather relaxing into the spaciousness, the expansiveness, the freedom of non-clinging, which in a sense is always here. So I hope this talk has given you some little ideas about what you can do, or some ideas about investigating your thinking. And why don't you explore it? Be like, you know, a great explorer. As if no one has ever explored thoughts ever before in human history, and you're going to be the first one. You know, what is this? What are these thoughts? What is thinking? What's your relationship to thoughts? Thoughts are amazing. I think thoughts are really amazing. Why did the thoughts exist? Where did they come from? How did evolution get to this? 5 billion years of evolution, and I'm thinking about having pizza for dinner. Isn't that awesome? I mean, that's a lot of evolution. That's a lot of things that had to happen to get to this, having this particular thought. It's awesome. Next time you're troubled by your thoughts, think about 5 billion years of evolution brought you to having that thought. And then maybe you'll have the wow perspective. Wow. And the wow perspective is really freeing. Wow. Anyway, enjoy your thinking.